Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Overtime Sports Show with Mike Wood, coming to you live from the greatest city on the planet, Durham, North Carolina, on this, the 27th day of April, 2015. Well, lots of things going on in the world of sports, but, you know, I would be remiss. Usually, you know, I save this show basically for sports-related events, and tonight in Baltimore, we do have a sports-related event because the riots that now have erupted in Baltimore has forced a cancellation of the game tonight with the Baltimore Orioles. Now, I've been listening to all the news coverage on CNN, MSNBC, looking at it on Twitter, CBS. And, you know, Freddie Gray was a young man that was tragically killed, and I'm going to say yes, by the Baltimore Police Department, because they're the ones that had custody of him. They're the ones that arrested him for making eye contact. Now, I don't know about you, but the felonious crime of making eye contact. Now, I looked through all of the law books from all 50 states and the federal codes and all that stuff, and I haven't seen where making eye contact was actually a crime. Then they say, well, he made eye contact and he took off running. Well, now, in black neighborhoods, I guess if you make eye contact and take off running, you have to have committed a crime. But if you're in a white neighborhood and you make eye contact and take off running, it's called jogging. You know, that's what it appears to me. I'm really not sure about that. Then they arrested him, threw him on the ground, handcuffed him. He could have been injured at that point. He gets up. His legs don't move. He's crying out. You know, he's hurt, and they don't give a crap. They throw him into the vehicle. They shackle him. They throw him back into the vehicle, and between the time he left, what the video has, between the time he left and they called for medical attention, his spine was broken. Okay. Then they said in their report that there were no bruises on his body. There was no trauma to his body. There was no nothing to his body. But the man's spinal cord is broken. He lays in a coma in the hospital until he passes away. Had his funeral today. Now, I'm watching the news coverage, and once again, basically the entire news coverage is consisted of them. I have to cancel the Baltimore Orioles game. So, see, this is what the anger is in Baltimore. See, I am a baby of the 60s. These kids that were out here today don't know anything about the 60s. They don't know anything about having to go in the back of restaurants. They don't know anything about being called the N-word. They don't know anything about really being called boy. They don't know anything about having to scratch and fight, having to sit around at school. And when school was first integrated, I was like in the third grade, maybe fourth grade, and they integrated and sitting around in a circle, and the teachers would go around and say, what would you like to be? And they get to the white kids, and they would say, well, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be an astronaut. Get to the black kids, well, I want to be a lawyer. And the first thing the teacher says, this is a Caucasian teacher, tells you, can't no N-word be a good lawyer. And felt comfortable in saying it. Just as easily as they were breathing, they said that to a kid. Then you wonder why people are mad. Let's move forward to 2015. Well, let's go 2014. Ferguson, Missouri. All of a sudden now, you shoot a kid. Hands up, don't shoot. Justice Department says, oh, we don't have any evidence that, you know, that the police officer is lying. Well, no, you don't have any evidence because there was no videotape. And without the videotape, they're not going to say, well, yeah, the officer was wrong. They're just not going to do it. The only way you're going to have to prove it is with videotape. Now, take the officer down in North Charleston. He shoots the guy who's running away from him 8 times. Then he takes and plants a taser and says he was trying to use my taser on me. If it wasn't for that guy standing at the fence with that video camera, that's exactly the narrative that they would have gone with. That's what they teach you in police academies. They teach you the verbiage. He was going for my gun. I feared for my life. Now, every one of these fatal shootings that you see, the verbiage is the same. I fear for my life. He was going for my weapon. That verbiage is the same. Come forth to Baltimore. Well, I'll even go to New York. Eric Garner in New York. They're going to sit there and tell you, after you see it on videotape, that the police officer did not use a chokehold. You watch it on videotape, and the police officer is using a chokehold. But they're going to tell you that you didn't see him use a chokehold. That's what makes people very angry. I'll go back to my analogy I always use. The analogy I use is this. A guy is out with another girl at the food court at the mall, holding hands, kissing, hugging, smooching, whatever they're going to do. The guy's girlfriend walks in and sees him doing this. She sees it with her eyes, and she even takes out her iPhone that her mama just bought her and takes a videotape of him doing that. She walks over to him. She says, "What are you doing? What are you doing here with this girl?" He goes, wait a minute, wait a minute, before you go off, I wasn't doing anything. You show him the videotape. Well, I got it on videotape. You show it to him. And he's going to say, whoa, wait a minute, baby, hold it. Are you going to believe me or your lying eyes? See, that's the thing that's getting all these people all riled up in Baltimore. They saw the videotape. They heard the young man's screams. They know the police department in Baltimore. It's been a long history of antagonistic behavior between the African-American community and the Baltimore Police Department, almost like everywhere in the country. I mean, you know, the police departments, I'll even give an example here in Durham. If they respond to an African-American side of town, they take 5, 6, 7 cars. If they go to a white part of town here in Durham, they take one. And that's where the shooting starts. That's where they get shoot at, but they only take one. But they come to my house, they take 3 or 4. I was looking for a home recently. Riding around, I got an address from a realtor. I wasn't familiar with the neighborhood here in Durham. It's one of the very few that I wasn't familiar with. But I rode around, and I said, found the house. Pulled up in the driveway. The realtor said, "I'll be there in 5 minutes. So I'm sitting there in the car waiting for the realtor to get there. I see one Durham police car. I see 2 Durham police cars. I see 3, 4, 5 Durham police cars showed up to walk up and ask me what I was doing at the house. First of all, I told them it's none of their business. But since you're here, I'm just waiting for the realtor to get here. They said, "Can I see your driver?" "Yeah, you can see my driver's license." They said, "We got a report of a suspicious car." I said, "Wait a minute. You got a report of a suspicious car? Then why are you talking to me and not the car? You didn't say suspicious person. You said suspicious car. The car is sitting right there. You can talk to. It's a Ford Focus. It'll talk back. It honks one time for yes and 2 times for no. So why are you bothering me?" "Well, you know, they called and said that it was." I said, "Now, how is my car suspicious?" I said, "Turn around, Officer Magoo. Look behind you. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 Ford Focuses parked at 4 different houses right behind you. 3 of those cars are the same color as my car, and the other one is red. So now, let me ask you a question. What makes this beige car suspicious and not those 3 or 4 cars that are parked behind me? What makes this suspicious? Oh, could it be that it's a black man driving? You say it's for a suspicious car. I say it's because of a black man driving. Let's see how it happens when we take it to court. Now, I know you got to do your job and you got to respond to the call, but I'll do my job and respond to your response. I hope they're as diligent in my neighborhood as they were in that neighborhood, but very rarely do I look out the window and see one. Very rarely. But they're going to respond there, boy. And see, that's the kind of stuff that really gets people angry. And what do they worry about the most tonight? Not the fact that there's a CVS burning, not the fact that people are getting hurt. I worry about the fact that 7 cops are hurt. One of them is unresponsive. They can't wake him up. They're throwing rocks and bottles. They got the Crips, the Bloods, and there's some group called the Black Gorillas. They're supposed to be getting together and going after cops, and nightfall is coming, and I got a strange feeling that this thing is going to get a heck of a lot worse before it gets better. And they're not looking at the root cause. The root cause of the whole thing, in my little humble opinion, was you actually arrested a guy for making eye contact with you. Your probable cause or reasonable suspicion is because he's a black man who is walking in a high crime neighborhood who made eye contact with you. So therefore, if there are 5,000 black men in that neighborhood, they need to stay in the house because they're going to be walking down the street and they may make eye contact with a cop because the cop is looking at them. Now, have you realized that if you say the guy made eye contact with you, that meant that you were also looking at him, right? I mean, he can't make eye contact with you unless you make eye contact with him. So you're looking at him. So did you arrest yourself? Oh, I'm where I'm supposed to be all the time, and you're where I say you're supposed to be. I saw something, too, that was very disturbing. You got a building on fire. The fire department comes in. The fire department's trying to put the fire out, and they're sitting there, and there's a reporter interviewing somebody there at the fire hydrant where the fireman had just hooked up the hose and turned the water on. And you know somebody cut the water hose to keep them from putting the fire out? Now, they're talking about there was no cops presence or cops didn't move in and stop anything from happening. Now, let me ask you a question. If you were the cops, all right, let's just say this. If I'm in my neighborhood, and in my neighborhood, the CVS store was the newest store that was in there, the only stores I have are mom-and-pop stores. I don't really have a grocery store in there. I got these mom-and-pop stores. I really can't buy fresh vegetables. I can buy high-priced stuff. Definitely there are liquor stores everywhere, of course, liquor stores and all that stuff. And I want to burn that up in my neighborhood. I want to tear that up in my neighborhood. Why would I risk my life to stop you from tearing your crap up? Just think about that. Why would I risk my life? If you don't care anything about your neighborhood, why should I? Well, of course, police are supposed to serve and protect. But you also got to help yourself a little bit, too, by not doing that. Now, I see, like right now on CNN, there's this guy here who's a preacher. You know, he's up there, we need to stop this, I'm going to stop. How are you going to stop that? Okay, you're a preacher. Okay, not all people are Christians. Not all people are Muslims. Not all people are Hindus or Buddhists or whatever. So how are you, I'm a Christian, I'm going to stop that? That doesn't mean anything. Where do you get that from? Oh, I'm a Christian, I'm going to stop this. Well, that just means you get close to heaven when somebody puts a bullet in your head. Are you crazy? You can't stop anything. And sooner that I'll quote religious leaders, and I don't know why is it that everybody thinks that black people need to be led somewhere? I never understood that. He's a black leader. I don't need anybody to lead me anywhere. I have a mind of my own. I can discern, decipher, and detect. I don't need nobody to lead me. And it's insulting to me when you say a black leader. Just because a guy's a preacher doesn't mean he's a leader. It just means he got a job on Sunday. That's all it means. I don't understand it. They think just because a guy is in the pulpit, people are going to stop and listen to him. Why? Considering all the stuff that they've been through to Creflo Dollar, considering all the charlatans they've been Eddie Long, how are you going to sit down and listen to them? Like they have the cure-all and the know-all. Well, Reverend, I don't know if you put two and two together, but all these problems of black men getting killed in the community, getting roughed up by the police, have been there before now, so where was your leadership then? Now, all of a sudden, the TV camera's around, you're going to step out front, I'm the leader now. But where were you out there talking about it then? Didn't hear nothing from you then. But now, all of a sudden, it's national. Now, all of a sudden, I'm a leader. Interesting, isn't it? Why don't I take a few minutes here on the Overtime Sports Show to talk about that? But I just got to say this. And then we're going to get to a special guest like Kathy Reeves of PD Sports Recruiter. She's going to come on and she's going to talk to that. Now, I keep reading all these. Oh, let me bring this up too. I keep reading all these articles about how you're supposed to act when you talk to the police. How I'm supposed to act when I talk to the police. I don't know any other way to act other than the way I have been acting. I am not going to cow down Yasser Massa to nobody. That badge does not give Opie Taylor the right to violate my rights. So I'm supposed to. So he has on a badge. By the way, as a taxpayer assistant, a badge I allow him to have. So he's going to have on a badge, and I'm supposed to act differently because he's wearing a badge. I'm not going to be disrespectful, but he's not going to be disrespectful to me either because basically I pay his salary. He's not going to be disrespectful to anybody else because basically he's paid not to be. He's paid to be a professional. And if he's paid to be a professional asshole, then I expect to see on his nameplate as asshole instead of his last name. Okay? So then they say, obey the law. Well, as I recall, this young man in Baltimore was obeying the law, and they stopped him for eye contact. So if you're a black man in America, it doesn't matter if you obey the law or not. You still have done whatever it is that happened. I mean, it doesn't make any difference. If somebody steals something over on the other side of Durham, then I'm a suspect just because I'm a black man. And I haven't done anything. I haven't broken any laws. All I did was make eye contact. I could have been saying, hello, officer, how are you today? Making eye contact. But I'm guilty and thrown on the ground because I made eye contact with you. So when they say obey the law, that is not necessarily the truth. Do you know how many people have been released out of prison over the past 3 years in America for being innocent? One guy was in there 30 years for something he didn't do. He just happened to be the first one they got to. 30 years. And then you say, obey the law. When the officer's talking to you, say, yes, sir, no, sir. I am 53 years old. I am not going to sit there and, sir, yes, sir, no, sir, a 21-year-old kid. Bite me. I'm not going to do it. Now, he can yes, sir, and no, sir, me, but I'm not going to yes, sir, him for what? Oh, because he's wearing a badge that I gave him? I don't think so. Now, do police officers deserve respect? Yes, they do. So do sanitation workers, so do EMTs, so do dog catchers, so do teachers, and so do other human beings. No different. No different whatsoever. No difference. Everybody deserves respect. Not because you're wearing a badge. What does that mean? But because you are a human being, be you black, white, green, brown, orange, or purple, everybody is the same. We may not believe the same thing. We may not go to the same places. We may not eat the same foods or look at the same television shows. But let me tell you something. Blood is red and the heart beats. And that means we're all the same. It's almost like when I was taking some police courses when I was in college, I had questions all the time about, you know, isn't this discriminatory? And the professors would never answer the questions about it being discriminatory. I mean, they almost, if you go into any class, they're almost saying that, you know, we're going to keep certain groups of people in check. You know, that's our job, you know. So it's just an extension of the overseer. From the slavery days, it seems like to me, is we're going to keep these folks in check. It is truly amazing in this country what's going on. What's going on tonight in Baltimore is a shame. It needs to stop. People are going to get hurt. People have gotten hurt. Somebody might get killed. I mean, this thing is just, the governor of Maryland now has declared a state of emergency. The police have moved in. Now, what's interesting to me is the police have moved, they're fighting. It seems like they're trying to arrest somebody right now. But they're fighting with somebody here live on CNN, and it, you know, the cops are coming in now. They're trying to restore some order. But what's getting me is the crowd is moving down towards the downtown there in Baltimore, and the cops are too little, too late. They stood by, like I said, and watched them burn the neighborhood down. Which, if you want to burn your own, remember the riots in L.A. after Rodney King. And they let the people just burn everything down? Well, I mean, if you're going to burn your own neighborhood down, fine. Do you know the neighborhood still has not come back yet? Yeah, politicians come through. It was Bill Clinton and George Bush. Remember back in those days when they walked through? Yes, we're going to make this into a trade zone, and we're going to. They still ain't got nothing back there yet. And the same thing is going to happen here in Baltimore. One guy said it best. You got one side of Baltimore that looks like a modern-day, beautiful, the regatta, the harbor, and then you have the other side of Baltimore that looks like nothing. They have nothing. And, yes, tonight these are rioters. This goes beyond the killing of the young man. This is frustration of the sit-in. The rioters are not right. They're not. They're not right at all. You see right now people from the Nation of Islam walking up and down the street trying to stop this, the Christian community trying to stop this. It's not stopping anything because no one cares what they think. If I'm not a Muslim, so what? It's like the Pope. I'm not Catholic. I don't care what the Pope says. So what? The Pope says, we're going to do this. Fine. Have at it, brother. But I'm not Catholic, so I don't care. But anyway, we're going to take a short break, and after we finish this, after we finish that break, we are going to come back and we'll talk to Kathy Greaves of PD Sports Recruiters right here on the Overtime Sports Show.
Go, Caleb!
Come on, hit a homer, Jesse!
Let's go, guys!
Hey, did you guys know that kids who play sports earn more money when they grow up?
Of course. I knew that.
Hey, did you guys know that kids who read books have a bigger vocabulary?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Wow, jinx. Did you guys know that friendly children have more friends?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true. I knew that. Did you guys know that winter babies are better at music?
Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Obvious. Oh, hey, guys. Did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
Huh. I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure I knew that. I'm pretty sure you didn't.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Oh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Now, when I was a little boy, at the age of 5, I had something in my pocket, keep a lot of folks alive.
We're back to the Overtime Sports Show, and a little bit of Bo Diddley. It's a little bit apropos for today. I'm a man, and that's exactly what the people of Baltimore need to say to the police, that the mayor who, matter of fact, come to think of it, the mayor has disappeared. She hasn't even been on television to say, "My people of Baltimore, please stop tearing the city up." The police commissioner hasn't even been on saying, you know, he was from Oakland. He was out there when that guy shot the kid who was laying on the ground, and he says, "I mistakenly pulled out my pistol instead of my taser," one of those kind, and shot the kid. He was involved in that. He was the police chief in Oakland at that time. So Oakland was a mess. So he came to Baltimore, and look what's happening. Baltimore's burning, too. Interesting, isn't it? But anyway, let's get off the political side and get to the sports side. And welcome to Kathy Greaves of PD Sports Recruiters. How are you doing this afternoon, Kathy?
I'm doing fine, Mike. Hope you are. Enjoying the show.
Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm just sitting here watching things just come apart here in one of our biggest cities in America, but that's okay. We'll move on. They were more concerned about whether or not the Orioles were going to play tonight other than if somebody was going to die. It was so amazing. I've never seen that. They were talking about, yes, they're rioting, they're looting, and they're not far from Camden Yards. Will the game be played tonight? I hate to say this, and please, all the listeners out there, forgive me for saying this, but who gives a damn whether or not they play a baseball game? You know, people are dying, people are getting hurt. I mean, that should be of utmost importance, but they were worried. They canceled the game. I mean, they postponed the game because they pulled the police officers away from there because they need them in the city. So because of that, they postponed the game. It wasn't because they were worried about the rioting. It's because they were worried about the rioting coming to them. So that's why they did it. But anyway, let's talk recruiting. Now, we've had signing days. Oh, by the way, let me say this too. UN Cheat was going after 13 players, 13 blue chip. And I hate to use these star players, but five-star, three-star, whatever kind of players, okay? And guess what? Because of the pending, and everybody's afraid of the pending NCAA sanctions, they only signed two, and the other 11 have gone elsewhere, including the biggest prize just signed with Duke about 20 minutes ago. He just signed with Duke instead of UNC because he didn't want to get caught up in the NCAA sanctions. Now, Is that letting us know that there's sanctions coming down the pipe for UNC? I don't know, but nothing's happened so far, but maybe there's something looming out there that we don't know about. Even Oklahoma, can you believe that Oklahoma State was hit for recruiting violations, and the NCAA hit them last week with recruiting violations, and UNC hadn't been hit with anything? I mean, I'm just blown away by that. But anyway, recruiting. Now, we know there's new NCAA regulations as far as eligibility standards coming up. You have tweeted it ad nauseum. I have tweeted it. I try to do it every day. These kids have got to have a 1080 SAT, a 24 ACT. They've got to have NCAA-approved core courses, a 2.3 GPA, and the most important thing, no matter if you're going to be in the NCAA, one or two, Division One or Division Two, or even in the NAIA or something, or the NJCAA, you've got to be in the clearinghouse. So explain to the kids who are still not listening, and to the parents who are still oblivious to the fact that Johnny needs to get his core courses and not play AAU summer ball unless it is after he finishes getting his core courses straight. Explain to them the ramifications of the new rules.
Well, the ramifications of the new rules will be that Johnny or Johnette will not be eligible to participate in an NCAA school if they do not meet all of the requirements that have been handed down by the NCAA. Not some of the requirements, not one of the requirements, not two of the requirements, not three. You must meet all of the requirements that have come down from the NCAA. Now, for example, the 10 core courses that have to be completed before your senior year. So what does that mean? Let's just take that for an example for a 2016 recruit, and I'm going to use basketball because we have a lot of basketball activities that are going on and that are continuing to go on throughout the summer, tournaments, showcases, things of that nature. So let's just take, for example, if we have a basketball team that plays, let's just say, 17, games. They've got a 17-game tournament or what have you. That will consist mostly of their entire summer. There won't be a lot of time left to do any type of studying or anything like that, because if you're playing, 17 games, you're guaranteed, you know, that you have to play at least three. So that's a lot of ball playing. It's not a lot of studying that is going to be going on, you know, during the summertime. So what parents have to be cognizant of is that in August, whenever it's time to start going back to school, it, you know, will be too late to try to recap any classes that you may or may not have missed, any type of requirements that had to be met before August the 1st. So just say, for example, the season is over, it's time to start going, you know, back to school. Come August rolls around, and they begin the clearinghouse process. They have a very high SAT score. They have a very high core GPA. But they are one course short of the 10 courses that are required. Well, guess what? You cannot take that class in your senior year. It's not going to be a possibility. That's not going to be an option. And that is because those classes will be locked in come August the 1st. Those 10 classes are locked in. So whatever, if you have 8 classes, if you have 7 classes, 6 classes, you have 9, those are locked in. And they have to be approved classes. So say you have 10 courses. Let's say, for example, you have 10 core courses. And one of the core courses that you have is not on the, you know, approved list, then you're still not going to be declared eligible to play at NCAA division schools. And also another change that they made is that you can't repeat any courses from that approved list. So that eliminates any type of trying to catch up that a lot of our student athletes do during their senior year. So that won't be an option that you have going forward in your senior year. So what really are some of the things that should be happening mainly for 2016 recruits that are coming up? He or she should be getting, of course, in the clearinghouse and going on visits. Now, another rule that has changed is that before you can do any visits now, you have to, of course, be in the clearinghouse. The NCAA has to have your official transcript, and you have to be on the approved college list in order to visit. So those are some of the changes. It's a lot of the changes that have taken, you know, place with regards to trying to get recruited. And this summer for a 2016 recruit is very, very important because a lot of the coaches, basketball coaches, will be hitting the recruiting trail for 2016 graduates. Because remember, signing day is always in April, and early signing is in December. So if you have a recruit, say they wanted to sign early December, then that means that you will have to do your official visits during the summertime because, quite frankly, Mike, all of the NCAA Division I scholarships may be gone by September or October. So it is very important for students who are looking to go Division I that needs to be your priority over the summer and not playing in tournaments and things of that nature. So those are some of the recommendations that I have for parents and their student-athletes as well.
Well, I mean, what do you think? You know, the frustration sits in for me, and I really don't have a dog in this fight. I really don't. My kids are grown, or, you know, the youngest one I have, she's not really going to go for NCAA sport, any intercollegiate sports. But the frustration I have is it seems like parents just don't get it. For some reason, they think because my kid can shoot a basketball real well or dribble a basketball real well, that's all he needs to get in college. Now, I will admit, at one time in the collegiate athletics, that was the case. Okay, all you need to do was be able to get out of high school, chew gum, and walk, and you could play collegiate sports. But now it has changed. Now there's really some academics, despite what happens at UNC and what they believe, there are some academic requirements that need to be met. What do you think, after, you know, you've dealt with parents and you dealt with recruiting, what is the disconnect between Johnny needs to really know how to read and write, and Johnny needs to know how to read and write real well to get to the highest level of competition? What seems to be the disconnect with the parents? What don't they get?
Well, the disconnect is that they've been doing this. This has been going on. This has been, you know, habitual. They've been doing this since seventh grade. With the AAU, they've been doing this since seventh grade. This is what they've always done. They go to the tournaments and every weekend and hoping to get, I guess, exposure or things like that. But see, here is the key. Here is the thing. Coaches who attend these tournaments, and you posted a very, very good video the other day about how to get notice at a tournament with 1,000 or more kids. And here is something that parents don't understand, and I talk to coaches all the time. As a matter of fact, I have been requested by several college coaches, divisions 1, 2, and 3, to put together another workout for particular kids that they want to see. These kids are already on these coaches' radar. So my goal and my job is to reach out to the kids. They've given me the list. They've given me the requirements of the kids that they want. And when they come to the workouts that I put together, they're looking for those particular kids, and they're going to offer those kids an opportunity to come back to do an official visit. So if you're going to these showcases and tournaments and all of these things that are going on that you're paying, you know, $5 to $10 every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Those are definitely money-making ventures, no doubt. But how many times are you going to continue to go to these showcases and walk away without an offer? How many times is that going to happen? So I don't really have the understanding. I'm not really understanding, you know, the madness behind that, because when coaches go to these events, they already have the kids that they're looking, going to see. They don't have time to just randomly be walking around and things like that, looking at different kids that they don't have any information or background on. So, you know, that's another thing that I tell parents all the time. How many times are you going to go to these showcases that someone decides to put together and say, we're having a showcase, and the same coaches be there, and it's the same, you know, type setup, and they're paying to get in. Then they get there and they play all these games and they have all these scores, they call 20, 30, 40, 50 points. They're winning awards at these tournaments, but you're leaving the same way you did when you got there. Those types of things, they don't happen in the showcases, in the workouts that I put together. When I have a workout, my coaches say, I want this person, I want this person, I want him, him, him. I want him, him, him. That's how they do. I don't herd kids in like that. And I don't understand, you know, how, you know, parents can continue to, that seems to be a very expensive venture. That would get expensive after a while. And to me personally, I would get somewhat tired of getting the same results. If you keep continuing to participate in these events, and particularly for 2015 recruits, it's getting very late in the day. It's getting very late in the day. And how long are you going to keep going to these events in May and June and July and things like that? So, you know, I don't understand, you know, all the rationalization behind going to the same showcases at the same place every weekend, held by the same people with the same coaches there. Now, if you really are interested in getting recruited, what is recommended? And again, that video that you shared with us is posted on your site. It's really good. What the recommendation is to go down the list and a list of schools that you're interested in, that you may be interested in playing for, that have your major. You reach out to those coaches. You tell them, hey, this is my high school. I'm going to be at this showcase. I'm going to be at this tournament, that tournament. Let them know where you're going to be. You have to get on that coach's radar, and you have to get on that coach's radar early. Else you're just going to be, you know, finding yourself just repeating, doing the exact same things and getting the exact same results. Now, you know, having said that and, you know, talking a little bit about, you know, NCAA, the violations, and, you know, governance. We're going to talk a little bit about governance and a lot of schools and education. You know, in desperation, out of desperation, we have a lot of student-athletes who have very low test scores, very low grades, and they have the athletic ability to be able to play on the next level. However, they cannot meet the academic requirements, so they cannot become eligible to get in school, to get the type of scholarships, financial aid, and things of that nature. And a lot of them turn to prep schools to try to bridge that gap in between the educational side and getting recruited to go to the next level. But as with anything else, there has to be some governance that's involved. And I'm here to tell you that education law, starting a school, is one of the most difficult things that a person can do. Whenever someone embarks on starting a school, prep school, academy, there is a lot of red tape that is involved in putting together an accredited program. For example, the first thing that has to happen is, you know, you have to be licensed. You have to be licensed for a school or academy or an institution. You have to be declared whether or not you are a K through 12 or secondary independent institution, or if whether or not you are a two-year degree-granting university or a four-year degree-granting university. So those are some of the things that have to be determined first and foremost. You know, there's licensing that you have to have for, you know, opening your school. You have to apply with your State Department of Education for approval to open your school, to approval for your curriculum. They have to come in. They have to do a walkthrough. They have to make sure that you are meeting all of the educational guidelines. There are Students with Disability, Special Needs Act, there are IEPs. There are things that have to be in place when you're talking about opening a school. You can't just decide, well, hey, I'm going to open a school. I'm going to offer this, this, and this. And I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to call it tuition, or I'm going to set this price, I'm going to set that price. All of those things are governed by your State Department of Education and the U.S. Department of Education. There are accreditations that you have to go through. And let me tell you, Mike, accreditation is no joke. For example, some accreditation agencies require you to be in operation someplace else, at least 2 years. You have to have at least 2 years of operational to show that you are successful. You have to be under someone else. So accreditations are very, very difficult to get. They're very expensive. And, you know, this is why you have school teachers, you have educators who are doing all these things to try to keep their license, this licensing. Everybody has, you know, a governing body. And there seems to be a lot of coaches who feel that they can pop up a prep school and call it a prep school and, you know, cut through the red tape of going through their State Department of Education and getting the proper approvals to be able to call a credible institution. You go through the U.S. Department of Education to get all your credentialing done and have your curriculum approved by the U.S. Department of Education, because you can't, you know, play with buzzwords like tuition, schools, you know, prep schools, and things like that. When you use the word tuition and you start accepting monies for the purpose of tuition, and Mike, you and I know this, in order to get tuition, you have to register for a class. That class has to have a classification code. For example, when we were in college, you know, the lower freshman classes are 100, the sophomore classes are 200, the junior classes are 300. So those classes have to be classified. Those courses have to be classified. And then the next thing you do is you register in a course, and then they generate a bill, which is, you know, for tuition. You can't have tuition without offering a class. You can't have tuition without school teachers. You can't have tuition paid to a home address. You've got tuition going to your house. That's not what defines tuition. Those things are questionable, and they raise red flags. Also, schools not accepting personal checks, check or money order and cash. You know, if you are a reputable school, you will accept all currencies of money. You will accept checks. You will accept cash. You will accept certified money orders. You will accept official checks, bank checks, MasterCard. These are all of those things. So if we have, you know, these prep schools that pop up and piggyback off of the accredited college or university's accreditation, you know, is going to raise some red flags. So, you know, we have these students, so many of them are so desperate to play a sport. You know, they don't even, you know, look at these things. For example, you have the football. If you have a football prep program, you know, have these coaches, have they been to any type of sensitivity training? Have they been to any kind of diversity training? Do they have any concussion training experience? You know, do they have the appropriate medical staff out there in case this child goes out here and is playing football for this prep school? And heaven forbid they get in a serious spinal injury or have a serious concussion. You know, do they have the insurance to cover that? Do they have the training to cover that? You know, are they trained on, you know, education law? Are they trained on FERPA laws? You know, that those transcripts and student information, there is a certain, they have a certain duty to keep that that information confidential. It just can't be lying around anywhere. There are certain conversations that have to be kept confidential between the student and the teacher, the educational institution, and things of that nature. For example, I'm going to talk a little bit about the public schools. If you notice, when you look on the roster for Max Prep, they no longer print the entire name of the kid. They put the initial and the last name, because the privacy laws are constantly changing. You can't even, you know, say that this kid or that kid plays. You have, they are now using the initials, whereas before they were having their entire first and last name displayed on the Max Prep roster. So, you know, we have, you know, so many parents who believe that their child, well, I can just go to this prep school and I can pay $2,500 in tuition. Well, if you are paying tuition to go to the prep school and then you're paying tuition to go to the community college, that's double tuition. And not only that, the tuition that you're paying doesn't cover your food. It doesn't cover your room and board. It does not cover room and board, meal plans, or any other tuitions and things of that nature that may or may not be incurred. And that's not how prep schools are supposed to be run. Fork Union is an accredited prep school. Oak Hill Academy in Virginia is an accredited prep school. They have their accreditations listed. They're accredited by the Independent Association of Schools, which is what they are, because they are a post-secondary education. So they would not fall under the SACS K through 12 accreditation. For example, there are schools in Florence, South Carolina, the high schools there are accredited through SACS, but they have a K through 12 accreditation, because SACS accredits higher institutions. So they're accredited by SACS, but for the K through 12 curriculum, which means that the State Department of Education in that state has approved their curriculum. And that's where it starts. So, you know, we can't, you know, be blindsided by the fact that, hey, you know, I'm going to be playing football, I'm going to be playing basketball, I'm going to be getting film, and I'm going to be doing this, and I'm going to be doing that. Because guess what? If you don't pay the money that they're asking, because it's not tuition, it's labeled as tuition, but it's really a fee that you're paying. Because tuition is associated with schools, and the prep schools that are, you know, in South Carolina. If you're not accredited, wherever you are, if you're not accredited by your State Department of Education, you're not a school. If you don't have your own FAFSA code, you are not a school. If you do not have your accreditation, your independent schools, your independent school, you're not accredited. If you don't list your accreditation on your website for everybody to see, and to check and to validate, you're not accredited. So we have to stay focused on, you know, the most important things. And I always say the purpose of going to college is to get an education, and anything else is icing on the cake. But we have a lot of players, a lot of parents, they get sidetracked, and they want Johnny or Johnette to so anxiously play, you know, football or basketball or things like that, that they get caught up in, you know, in this prep school mentality, and then they end up owing all this money, or they end up falling behind, and then they get kicked out. But when you get kicked out, you know, don't get upset with the folks at the prep school, because they have it printed in black and white. I mean, I have it right here, in black and white. It says, you know, if you fall behind at any time, players will not be allowed to participate in any football activities until tuition and commitment fee is paid in full. And that this is on the how to get recruited. This is here. Your fee or tuition does not include room and board, meal plans, and it does not include your tuition at the accredited college that you're attending. So we have to stay focused on, you know, what is important. And the important thing is, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. Now, let's go back. Let's go to this, your recruiting service, since it all ties in here together. Now, here's the thing that really interests me, and I need you to talk to the audience on this. Now, whether it's a prep school or not, or it could be AAU, it could be any other type U that they have out there, here's what I find difficult to comprehend. I will sit here, and I will make sure that Johnny or Johnette has the latest Jordans to play the game in. I will make sure that Johnny or Johnette has Beats to go on their ears. I will make sure that Johnny or Johnette has the latest iPhone that they make for $800 to $1,000. I will make sure that they have the gold chains, the gold grill teeth, or whatever it is. As a parent, I'll make sure they have all of that, the latest jeans, the latest shirt, everything. Okay, but I will not take a few hundred dollars and get a recruiter to make sure they get the best deal possible or the best school for their, you know, and here's the thing, not necessarily the best school for their talent, but the best school for them educationally should be what mm-hmm. you're looking for. Not necessarily the best school for the talent. I mean, they could have, I mean, top D1 talent, but they're a middle-of-the-road student. So to take a kid that's got top D1 talent and put him at Stanford, it's going to be a lose-lose for everybody. It might be a win for a year for Stanford, but it's going to be a lose for your kid because they're going to be the best kid that never was, and they'll let him keep the uniform. Okay? So you want your kid to finish all 4 years. But you got parents that won't even take a few hundred dollars to pay a recruiter to help them get the best deal. Now, I know that you run across that. I know that most recruiters out there have run across that. What is the benefit of – we know what the benefit is of not getting a recruiter, and that is they get to keep all those uniforms they went to showcases in. They get some mm-hmm. pretty uniform tops, and they may even get a little net to put around their neck. But what is the benefit of getting a recruiter to make sure that your kid gets the best that's out there?
Well, the parent, it starts with, you know, it's a mentality of what you see is most important. A lot of parents, and believe it or not, there are a lot of parents who are hiring recruiters because of the different changes to the NCAA. There are lots of people who are actually reaching out to specialists who can make sure that that their child is able to get a scholarship because they value the importance of not being able to pay tuition looking down the road. But there are a lot of parents who can't, you know, look down the road. They don't see the residual of investing in test prep services and recruiting services and educational services. You have parents who are just not going to invest in their children, and you have some parents who will invest in their children. Because parents who invest in their children know that, okay, if I pay this small percent, and even in some of the high-end recruiting companies that go all the way up to $2,600, $3,000, that's still a small amount compared to a $36,000 a year tuition bill. So if I invest $2,000 to $3,000 or whatever some of the high-end recruiters are, or a couple of $100s into someone who can make sure that I have the opportunity to not pay all this high tuition, that's what I would do. Because I'm running into a lot of recruits right now, 2015 recruits, who, after they get all of their monies and everything, the out-of-pocket expense for their parent is still high. It is still high. I have recruits who are getting scholarships. They're, you know, full scholarships. I have students who are getting partial scholarships. But, see, everything is with timing. So if you are a 2016 recruit, now is the time to get with the recruiter and say, I want to go, you know, Division One, Division Two, and I want a school that has a major in this sport or that sport. So, you know, a recruiter can zoom in on those things. They can key in on those attributes and focus on those schools. I want to be, I'm just going to say, for example, I want to attend the school in this part of the United States, and I want it to be this particular school, and I want it to have this particular major. Well, a 2016 recruit, now is the time to be putting all those attributes into place. But if you are a 2015 recruit and you start your recruiting process, you know, around the NCAA Final Four, when all the coaches are in Indianapolis and no one is really working around Easter, you know, you've already lost a week. And then, you know, the week after that, they're getting back to work. They're getting ready for a signing day on April the 15th. So after January, that is, you know, not really the time to be saying, I want, you know, a school, I want to go to a Division One school, and I want the school to be here, and I want it to be in the major to be this. Unless you have a very, very, very high GPA and you are scoring very, very, very high points. But other than that, it's going to be quite challenging. And I tell students a lot of times, when time is drawing near, the way that it is, before you make a decision to turn down a scholarship because the school doesn't have your major, just think, come August, you're going to have to be in school someplace, and your eligibility clock is going to be ticking. Whether you're playing or whether you're not, it's definitely going to be one or the other. So my advice to that student is to never turn down scholarship monies, because you're not going to start your major in your freshman year, not at a traditional four-year college or university. You're not going to jump right into your major on your freshman year. I don't care who you are. I don't care where you go. That's not going to happen. Now, these schools, like, you know, your, I call them your you know, online classes, you know, these classes that you see on TV, Everest and things like that. Yeah, those classes, those schools may just have you in your major. But if you're going to a degree-granting institution, you're not going to start in your major in your freshman year. You're not going to go to Duke and start working in your major in your freshman year. You're not going to go to North Carolina Central. You're not going to go to East Carolina. You're not going to go to East Michigan. You're not going to go to Notre Dame. You're just not going to do that because they have been issuing degrees for over 50 years, and the way that they educate has not changed. You may have social media and things of that nature, but you're not going to declare your major in your freshman year. That's never going to happen. Now, you know, what do you say, Mike? What say you?
Well, when I got to school, I knew exactly what I was going to do when I got there. I knew exactly what I was, you know, but I was one of those unique people that knew that either I was going to be, it sounds strange, either I was going to be three things. I was going to be a coach, I was going to be president of the United States, or I was going to be in radio. So I took the lesser of the three evils. I'm in radio. So, I knew exactly what I was going to do. But yeah, I understand, you know, exactly what you're saying. Oh, by the way, as a sideline, I just want to say this. Now, for all you kids out there who are going in to talk to coaches and present yourself with coaches, to coaches, I know there's this thing that they have now, young people have called sagging. And you sag your pants down and see half your draws. Well, let me give you a perfect example of why you shouldn't do that. I'm sitting here monitoring the things that's going on in Baltimore, and now they've broken into and starting to loot a place called the Baltimore Mall. I don't know exactly where that is, but it definitely sounds like it's a mall in Baltimore. And there was a guy who went in and stole something, and on his way out, his pants fell down around his ankle and it tripped him. And there was another guy who dropped the stuff he had because he was trying to pull his pants up. The moral to the story is, pull up your pants and buy a belt. That's all I can tell you. How terrible does it look? You're on national TV. It looks terrible that you're looting a place anyway. And then you get tripped because your pants fall down because you were sagging. Or either you can't run because you got to use one hand to hold your pants up and the other hand to hold your iPhone. It's just a terrible thing. Just something so the kids understand when they go talk to coaches. Don't sag, okay? Don't do that.
You shouldn't sag, period.
I'm just saying, yeah, I mean, you shouldn't sag, period.
Agreed.
You can't even steal something without falling on your face. I mean, give me a break here. I mean, you know, but, you know, that's just an aside. But, Kathy, thank you for appearing on the Overtime Sports Show. A lot of good information is given out. This has been a numerous amount of times you've appeared here on the show. And you know, we're going to keep hammering away at this thing until the young people and their parents understand. I mean, it's almost like they sit back and think. You see, you know how many kids are going to be absolutely devastated starting in this August, or when they find out that they're not going to be able to play in the NCAA Division I or II. They're going to go to Division III or NAIA. They're going to be completely devastated because, they're going to sit there and say, well, I got my 10 courses. But remember, we kept saying and hammering away NCAA-approved courses. And there are also kids out there who think it's a joke. And right now, going into August, when everything's going to get locked in, they've only got six classes. Or they've got the regular eight classes or seven classes, and for some reason they just don't believe what people are saying. They think because they play AAU. By the way, let me ask you this before you go: how many national letters of intent? I want to just throw this out there for food for thought. How many national letters of intent have been signed by athletes from AAU teams?
Well, first of all, and that's another thing I wanted to say, I'm glad you said that, the national letters of intent only apply to Division I schools. I've seen a lot of news reporters that saying kids signing national letters of intent to go to prep schools. No. National letter of intent, and I had my mentor coach, and I do have mentor coaches that keep me straight, keep me motivated. I listen to them. I'm thankful to them. And you know, they keep me on, you know, the straight and narrow. Letters of intent, national letters of intent only apply to Division I schools. Division II schools, they have the financial aid package, letters of intent. Division III schools have letters of intent. But the Division I is the only NLI. That's it for Division I schools. So that's one of the things that I want to go out there. Now, how many kids do I know, me personally, that have gone Division I? All of the Division I students, prospects, that I know have attended the McDonald's All-American. Now, Raymond Felton, who is from my hometown, who played with the New York Knicks, and he's now with the Dallas Mavericks, he came from a very small town. He was in the McDonald's All-American. And he, you know, went to UNC. He went to UNC.
Did you go to class?
Right, did you go there? So he went, he went to UNC, and he got drafted, you know, in the NBA. So all of the Division I, the D1 prospects have funneled through the McDonald's All-American, because the first thing to be able to participate in the McDonald's All-American, you got to have a really high GPA. You got to be past the 3. It's got to be way up there, 3.5, 3.6, 3.7, 4.4.
But have they ever, it's like, okay, so I played nothing but AAU basketball. I didn't play on my school team. I didn't play on anything. I played AAU. Now, can I go straight from playing AAU to signing a national letter of intent? Because a national letter of intent has to go through a school of some type, doesn't it?
Not necessarily.
Uh-huh.
Not necessarily. And AAU kids can sign Division I. They can sign Division I. And the national letter of intent, it can go to the athletic department at their school, or it can go directly to the parents, or it can go directly to the kid themselves. But as long as the parents get it. But AAU kids who've never played on a team in high school, they can, you know, sign to Division I schools if they are eligible to get in. I mean, they meet the eligibility, requirements. They can get, signed to Division I schools. I have a recruit that is playing at a school in New York. He just got re-offered for the state at State University of New York, and he did not play. He played 1 year, his sophomore year, on the high school varsity team, and he didn't play anymore after that. But he's very good. He played AAU. He's my Florida recruit, and he's going to be playing at the state for the State University of New York.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this now. If I can play, all right, let's say I can play AAU and still go to, anybody can still go to a Division I school and play. I'm not saying, but if I can sign a national letter of intent by playing AAU, why then would I bust my brains out to play for my school team when I can get a lot more exposure and a lot more versatile, a lot more, I can go to Las Vegas, I can go to Miami, Florida, I can play against players from all over the country as opposed to playing against the same fellas for 4 years. You know, because that's usually what happens. Whoever your class is, you play against them from junior high school all the way through high school. So what would be the advantage of me playing high school basketball and or football and or baseball as opposed to AAU where I could get more exposure? What would be the advantage of playing for the school team?
Well, the advantage of the school team would be, just that, being, on the school team. And a lot of kids who try out for the varsity teams don't make the varsity teams. So if they don't make the varsity teams, then, they have to look at, other outlets to be able to, to play AAU. But, the advantages and the disadvantages, I'll go with the disadvantages. Let me do that first. Yes, the AAU, it gives you more exposure. It gives you an opportunity to travel. But, contrary to belief, everybody doesn't like that. They like the traditional, high school playing, being under the High School League Association, and,
you know, being, you know, under the, you know, the auspices of the high school and playing against other high schools, you know, and things of that nature. But when I was, you know, growing up and they had AAU, of course, AAU has changed so much now. When kids did not make the varsity team, then they went and they played with the rec league team or the AAU team. But AAU has, you know, since changed. It has taken on its own identity, and you know, it is doing, you know, so much more than, you know, just playing basketball. It's like you said, you have exposure. You know, coaches can come and see, you know, more players in one particular place as opposed to coming to your high school. But you still have those coaches who go to the McDonald's All-American. It's just a preference. There are coaches who do not. I have coaches who just absolutely do not like those showcases. They say it's just too many kids. They prefer to go to the high school and see a kid play. They prefer to go to the McDonald's All-American. So it just all depends on, you know, the flavor of that coach and exactly what it is that they want. Now, when my sons were playing AAU, I think they did it like one time, and that was enough for me. I don't like that concept. It's too much running for me. It's just me personally. You know, I like the traditional high school basketball team because they have, you know, here's that word again, they have governances. Now, I don't know what the governance is for AAU and the rules and regulations and stipulations and things like that, but, you know, high school.
Yeah, the governance for AAU is called MONEY. But anyway.
Oh, all right.
You know, I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, so.
You know, that seems to be the only governance I can find for that. You know, and another thing, then I'm going to have to let you go because we need to wrap this up. But I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to say this about prep schools. I was reading, because I got interested in prep schools recently, and I start reading through some of the requirements and stuff of prep schools. And you're right, talking about tuition and all that stuff. But here's what gets me the most, and here's what I think parents should watch out for. They tell you at these prep schools, this particular one, I'm not going to call out the name of the prep school. I might do it anyway, but I'm not going to call out the name of the prep school. But they say, for football anyway, you must have your own equipment. I said, wait a minute. Hold on. Wait a minute. The school is supposed to issue you your equipment. I'm going to tell you why. Because if the school issues you the equipment, if you get injured while playing at that school, then the school must take care of the bill.
That's okay? Right.
But if you bring your own equipment and you get hurt, the school can say, oh, I didn't have anything to do with that equipment. And I'm sitting there saying,
well,
so people are falling for
this. Here again, that's a good analogy. The prep school is really not a school. That's not a
right.
school.
It's a travel club.
The prep school, if you're not accredited, if you're curriculum has not been approved by your State Department of Education, your State Department superintendent, the curriculum and instruction, your accountability department for your state, that's not a school. So these are, you know, some things that you're just making up. There's one particular prep school that makes it a requirement. One of the requirements to admissions is that you apply to the two-year college. Another requirement for admissions is that you apply for financial aid at that two-year college, listing that accredited two-year colleges Title IV FAFSA code on their prep school website, listing the financial aid department for that school and the email for financial aid. That's a requirement. And then they have a picture of FAFSA under the prep school admissions requirements. Now, why is it a requirement that I apply for financial aid at my community college? Why is that a requirement for me to be at the prep school? You should have your own FAFSA code.
Wait a minute.
Why do I have to do that?
Wait a minute. So,
I'm reading.
Let me understand this. Hold on a minute. So I'm supposed to be going to Mike Wood Prep Academy. Okay?
Yes.
I'm going to Mike Wood Prep Academy. All right. I'm supposed to be going to Mike Wood Prep Academy. But I go to John John Community College.
That's right.
Then, okay, so where do I take, if I'm going to Mike Wood Prep Academy, but I'm going to John John Community College, then I'm actually going to John John Community College and not Mike Wood Prep Academy. How do I get to go to an academy and a college at the same time? It seems like, I mean, isn't that double dipping? How am I taking classes over the Prep Academy?
That is red flag, and you're paying two tuitions, according to Mike Wood Prep Academy. Mike Wood has a tuition for Mike Wood Prep Academy's tuition for basketball is $2,550. That is the tuition for Mike Wood Prep Academy for basketball. However, for Mike Wood Prep Academy, the tuition for football is only $1,500 a year. Now, this is what I'm saying about Mike Wood Prep Academy. Mike Wood Prep Academy's basketball program must be paying kickbacks to school coaches that sign my recruits. You know why I say that? Because everybody knows that the football program is the most expensive program in any college or university, and the basketball program is least expensive. So why is my basketball program double the price of the football program? Because what I do is I take $1,500 and I give my coach, the coach that recruits my kids, I'm going to give him a kickback for recruiting my kids. I'm going to give him $1,500 too.
Yeah, but see, I guess what I'm confused at is this. I mean, I'm confused. If Mike Wood Prep Academy, okay, is sitting over here, and I'm supposed to be attending Mike Wood Prep Academy, why in the heck am I going to class at a community college when I'm supposed to be at the Prep Academy, because that's where I'm supposed to be going to school? Because I'm attending the Prep Academy because that's where I'm playing my sports, but I'm not playing my sports at the community. Why am I, you know, I'm not playing at the community college. I'm playing at Mike Wood Prep. So why would I not be playing at Mike Wood Prep? Why is community college even involved? Why do I even have to?
The community college is involved because Mike Wood Prep is not accredited, and Mike Wood Prep does not have any certified teachers. Mike Wood Prep does not have any teachers with the credentials. Mike Wood Prep is piggybacking off of the credentials and the educational preparation of the faculty and staff of John John Community College.
Okay, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm just going to join the Army and the heck with all of it. Okay, so I'm just going to, you know, the heck with it. Well, anyway, Ms. Reeves, thank you so much for being on the Overtime Sports Show. It's been a pleasure to talk with you tonight about recruiting, and we'll have to do this again when I can figure out this Prep Academy stuff or whatever it is. But thank you so much for being on the Overtime Sports Show, and we will talk to you probably a little bit later on, probably right before August, to find out if there's been any more changes in recruiting and what kids need to do, football season coming up in August, what they need to do to prepare themselves to be, you know, to be the year after's recruit. So we want to make sure we
Sounds
keep this
great.
Thing fresh and year-round for everybody.
Yes.
So thank you so
Most
much.
Definitely. You're quite
All
welcome.
Right.
Have a good evening. Okay.
You
Bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye. That was Kathy Reeves of PD Sports Recruiters talking recruiting here on the Overtime Sports Show. I want to say thank you so much for listening tonight. It has really been an interesting show. It's been an interesting day, and it seems like days are going to things are going to get more complicated as time goes on here up in Baltimore and everything else around the country. Well, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk at you next time right here on the Overtime Sports Show.